It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 234 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is another doubleheader in which it's a very timely episode because both interviews have to do with things that are happening this very week. This episode is scheduled to post on June 19th, and on June 20, Modern Testament Anthology of the Ethereal, Volume 2, will be coming out. So I'm talking with Frank Martin, the creator of this anthology series, about both Volume 1 and a special free comic book day version that he released. The second volume will be out tomorrow, Monday, June 20, at insanecomics.com, and go to their store on the site. Lots of good things go on, and we talk quite in depth about them, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. Then everything wraps up with an interview about Tiny, in which I talk with creators Roland Mann and Diona Herold about this updated version of Thumbelina. We talk about how the book came to be, about the different characters, and about what we might expect from Volume 2. There's also a Kickstarter that is concluding this week. The Kickstarter for Tiny will conclude this Saturday, June 25 at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. They've already met their goal, but there's still expenses to pay for, and they want to make sure that Tiny gets out as far as they can, so I highly encourage you to get out there and support this wonderful book. More than ever, there's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I want to welcome to the podcast Frank Martin, creator of a series on Insane Comics that I really enjoy called Modern Testament. And it's got a subtitle, Anthology of the Ethereal. How are you doing today, Frank?
Hey, how's it going?
It's good to talk with you about this. I've been doing a lot of talking with Insane Comics creators recently, and you guys are making some great stuff. And I really enjoyed your Modern Testament books.
Thanks. I mean, there's certainly enough Insane creators out there. We're a rowdy bunch.
Oh, good. The great thing about it is you guys get to tell your stories. You know, Insane is an avenue by which maybe DC or Marvel might not pick you up, but these guys can go out and make your books available through digitally or physical so people can read this stuff. And I think there's a lot of comic stories out there we've missed because, you know, we only had two companies and they only had a limited print run, and all these great stuff that we could have learned and heard about, we didn't get. So people like Insane, I really appreciate because they make people like you able to tell the stories that you want to tell.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it too. And it's all our publisher, James Munch. I mean, he did a great job. Obviously, there's other indie publishers out there, but he really puts his all into marketing and getting us out there and really giving people a shot who might not have one otherwise. So he's definitely a voice for the creators who otherwise wouldn't be heard.
Right, which is great. Now, so you've got, as I understand it now, you've got the first volume came out, and now you've got a free comic book day one that came out, and the second volume, is that already out, or is that
that's
coming out?
That's due out this month in June, so that's going to be very
soon. Sometime during June, okay.
And then I have a third, I'm planning four, so I have a third coming out later this year, and maybe the fourth early next year.
Oh, wow. You're a busy guy.
Yeah, a little.
Man, all these good things. Now, talk a little bit about the series, because it's something different. I love variety in my reading, and so when I got a chance to come across this book, I was very intrigued by some of the stuff that you were saying. At the end of the first volume, you had a letter to readers and stuff like that, and you talked about the fact that angels, demons, and horsemen are nothing new to the world of fantasy. Mm-hmm. But you take kind of a biblical tack on it, and of course in the very beginning of the book, it says biblical beings, although ancient and iconic, struggle to be understood and find their places in today's society. Boy, is that true. So how did you come across this idea? Where did this concept come from to do an anthology about these kinds of characters?
So it started maybe almost a decade ago. I took a comic class because I'm a prose writer, so I love reading comics and I want to learn how about writing comics. So I took a comic writing class, and I had come up with an idea, and I came up with an idea about is the first story, Fallen Angel. It was a little bit different when on my first draft. The angel was in the bar, and the devil actually turned out to be a bartender, and I took the age-old scene of a guy in a bar talking to the bartender about all of his troubles, And I wrote the script, and it sat on my computer forever. Finally, I said, you know what? I got to get this made. But what am I going to do with a short? I can't really put it in an anthology. No anthology would accept it because it's just kind of some random story. So I'm like, let me develop one of my own. So I was thinking about theme, and I was like, well, I got an angel. Let me get a demon. And then from there, I said, I want to do something different, so let me do the Horseman Famine. And then that's how the anthology came together. I had one story, and I tried to sort out a theme, and it eventually created itself.
That's interesting because, you know, anthology books aren't necessarily the biggest sellers these days. But the great thing about anthologies is you get to tell shorter stories that have a little more punch to it. And your stories often have a beginning, middle, and end to it, which most of the superhero books these days are endless. They go on and on and on for decades, and there's no beginning or ending. It's just everybody just keeps talking to each other and punching each other, and then we don't get someplace. But it's great that you're telling these kinds of complete stories. I guess as a writer, that was something that was important to you.
Well, one of the emphasis I put on when marketing the book or just telling people about the book is that these are standalone tales. When I pitched it to James, he said, so what is this, like a prologue or a prelude? I said, no, this is it. These are stories. They're self-contained. And the good thing about it is by the end, hopefully I have four volumes out, three stories each, and you can pick up any one of them and just start reading any one of the stories because they're all self-contained and they follow the same theme of biblical beings. But my ultimate goal was, I mean, I had a choice on whether or not I can try to develop some grand epic plot with all these characters or I can separate them all and break down the characters individually and really get to the root of what it means to be that particular character, which I think I had a lot more fun doing.
Mm-hmm. Now, I got to ask, of course, biblical characters, have you gotten much in the way of response to the book? I mean, some people are probably not going to be happy that you're using biblical characters in a modern setting. And other people like me, I can distinguish between the Bible and other things. So for me, it's interesting to take the character and move them in a different direction. You might get to understand the characters better.
Maybe. I have some friends that are very religious, and they said they wanted to read it. And I said, okay, just don't take it the wrong way. And they're like, no, we don't take it the wrong way. We watch movies about angels and demons all the time. And I have some people who read it and they're like, I'm not really religious, but I like this book. I'm like, to me, it's not a religious book. I look at it as mythology. Same thing as Greek mythology or if it was Norse mythology or whatever. It's a book based on mythology. So that's how I took it. Yeah, I had some reviewers who said, I'm not really a religious person, so I didn't really appreciate the context of it. And I'm like, then you really didn't understand what I was going through and you can't make everybody happy. But I'm definitely happy with how it turned out.
Well, I have to tell you, it's something to read something that I haven't read before. And so for me to see biblical characters in this setting was something I have not read. So I love that. So right then, the moment you do that kind of stuff is I have no idea what you're going to do, which I love. I mean, I get so tired, sick and tired of when I start to read a story and 2 pages in, I can tell you what the last panel is going to be. Mm-hmm. So to see something that I couldn't do that was really terrific. And you're right. The first story, Fallen Angel, is a really good one. You don't expect what's going to happen. At least I didn't what was going to happen in the story. Two guys in a bar and things break out from there. Fallen Angel is probably the best one to start with because you set up what the world is like in all the stories. So I really like that. We see a struggle and it comes to a really interesting conclusion, which I enjoyed, and the fact that, let's just say, that not everybody wants to play the same game all the time, which I liked. I thought it was really great as far as that goes. And you said this was the first one that you came up with?
Yes. It was the idea I came up with was, well, what I don't want to give it away, but so the angel's in a bar, and he's kind of depressed about his job, and he eventually comes in contact with the devil. And originally it was the devil was going to be the bartender, the person he was complaining to. And that kind of got shifted around because the editor on the first project said that this isn't really going to work. So I had to shift it and twist it a little bit, and it became the essence of it stayed the same, but it actually became a completely different story.
Because I liked it. I really thought it was something different. When you get to the end, and I don't want to spoil the end either, I think that people, especially in stories like this where you have a shorter story, it's important not to give the ending away because you want people to enjoy it, you know, to read it. And so I really kind of feel that was, but it was a great way to start. I do want to ask, though, you say each one is a self-contained story. Do all these stories take place in the same universe, or are there multiple universes at work, or each story also was a different universe? How does that work?
As far as the universes go, I'm going to say that they're not the same universe. And the only reason I say that is because if you take out the Horseman stories, sure, you can say that they're all in the same universe. But the Horseman in the famine story in the first volume, you would see all three horsemen. Mm-hmm. And my plan is in the four volumes to focus on a different horseman every volume. So in volume two, I had the choice. I said, am I going to continue this universe and use the same horseman I did in the first one? But I didn't think that was fair to the character. So instead, I focus on a different horseman every single book. And each one is a different one than you see in the first volume. So they're definitely a separate universe.
Mm-hmm. It's really cool. Well, other thing I want to ask before we get into too many of the stories, how did you get to set up with the artists? Did you go through like Insane? Did they have access to artists?
No, Insane wasn't involved in the production. I had a completed book when I pitched to them as far as the first volume went. But All these were basically ads, solicitations. I took some recommendations based on my editor, and I met a couple of them that way. But my goal was to get as many fingerprints on the book as possible. So I didn't want to use the same colorist or the same inker or penciler on any one of the stories. So by the end, I'm going to have a whole bunch of people who had their hand in this series, which I'm having a lot of fun meeting a lot of different people.
I look at the guy who did the art on The Bad Guy. It's Branko Jovanovic. Isn't that the guy? He does other books. I've seen him on another title somewhere.
He's definitely done a lot of books, and I was very happy with that. I actually had a different artist to start with on the story, and he was doing a couple concept and thumbnail sketches, and I wasn't jiving with it. And eventually I found Branko, and I think he did a phenomenal job. It's definitely a different style, but it vibes well with the tone of the story.
Now, why don't you describe a little bit about what that story is about, because that's about 180 degrees different from the first story.
So The Bad Guy is a very, very simple story. It's something we've seen 100 times. A demon possesses a girl, and then their family struggles with ridding the demon from the body, from exorcising it. But during the story, we have a voiceover. We see the demon is basically doing the voiceover, and he's trying to convince the reader that he's not really a bad guy. I mean, he's got to do this, but he's a demon. A demon's going to be a demon. So he has a place, and he has a purpose, and he tries to convince the reader why he does this, why he has to possess the girl. And personally, I think that's my favorite story of them all.
Oh, really? That's kind of cool, because as much as I like that story, the one that really creeped me out was the one after that, Feast or Famine. Feast or Famine is about, well, why don't you describe it? Because if I do, I'm afraid I'll give something away you don't want people to know. Describe the story.
Feast or Famine is about, obviously, the horseman famine, and I wanted to focus on him because everybody loves every other horseman, but you rarely hear about famine. So I wanted to take that and push that forward, and then he's got a little bit of inferiority complex, and that everybody's worried about war and everybody's worried about diseases, but nobody really, famine needs time in the spotlight too. And I took all that anxiety and I threw it into the character, and he basically lashes out at a fat person because that's basically his enemy, you know?
Right.
So,
Oh gosh. And then he's at times he's like shoving food down her mouth and stuff like that. And I was just like, God, I was just so creepy.
Yeah. Some people were complaining. They said the art style didn't jive with the story. And I said, well, I purposely wanted somebody to give that American splendor feel to the story, that this is just an average day, average Joe. And I think that really exemplifies the creepiness and exacerbates it and makes it something's not right here. And it really sends a shiver down my spine when I see it.
Oh, it just totally creeped me out when I read it. I was, you know, it was like an exclamation point to the very first volume, because I just was like,
The first draft of that story was even more different than the first draft of Fallen Angel. That story, the first draft of it was famine. He's got the same thing. Nobody really cares about him, but instead of him being angry about it, he's depressed. Mm-hmm. So he's basically at a fairground where people gouge themselves on deep fried Twinkies. And he's sitting there, and he's all depressed. And John the Baptist, who basically wrote the Book of Revelations at the Four Horsemen Inn, is kind of comes over to him and says, hey, what's wrong, famine? And it was a very softer story. My editor just said, this is boring. You need to amp this up. So I went with a completely different direction in it.
Boy, you amped it up all right, I have to say. I still get little shivers when I think about that story, because, wow, it's just a creepy, creepy thing. And, you know, if you like creepy, this would just, again, be ideal. Right around Halloween would be an ideal time for people to access this book. But you don't necessarily have to wait that long, because honestly, creepy, you know, does real well. I mean, Supernatural's on the TV, 11 seasons. There's a lot of opening for this kind of story, and people really enjoy this kind of storytelling.
That's one of the things I liked about the book, in that it's really a creepy horror story, but the other stories aren't. It's a wide variety. I mean, they're all fantasy. They're all kind of supernatural, but they each have their different tone in that. Some are scary, some are action, some are more psychological, and I'm having a very fun giving a wide range of not only art styles, but tones of stories.
But isn't that good for you as a writer, though? You have more than one kind of story to tell.
Yeah,
Yeah, because, you know, the thing I get a kick out of is because people always want, you know, it's like when Frank Miller wrote The Dark Knight, Dark Knight Returns, then all of a sudden when The Dark Knight Returns 2 came out, people wanted it to be exactly the same as the first one. Well, he didn't do that, and a lot of people were really disappointed, and I was like, well, I'm glad it wasn't exactly the same as the first one. And so I like to read things that are different. I always feel that there's a lot of creativity in writers that you can go many different places than just the one or two places that you start out. Maybe you get a name by doing that. You know, to me, I like the fact that you're doing a variety of stuff. And what that does to me, too, like I said before, something I really love is not knowing where you're going. Mm-hmm. I just don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I have no idea what you're going to do. And I love that in the book. I just cherish that because so many times it's just not going to be that way. But so the first volume, when did the first volume come out? When was that?
First volume was part of Insane's first line of books that came out in May of last year.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So, boy, that's pretty good.
I believe they dropped on First Comic Book Day, too. He
really?
Released his first line of books on Free Comic Book Day, I think, if I recall correctly. But it was a year. And what happened was I made the first volume, and I really didn't know what I was going to do with it. I'm like, let me pitch it to some publishers. And James loved it. He said, you know what, were you going to make any more? And I was like, I thought about it. And he said, you should make more. And I was like, okay. So I started working on 2, 3, and 4 basically at the same time, which is why there's a year hiatus between them. And I believe, and I'm having a blast. And 2's done, 3's almost done, and I'm working on 4 now.
Great, because you know a lot of people don't. They're slow on the production end of it. You've got this great story, but it takes a while for you to get all the pieces together. But it's great that you're making all these things happen. And it's interesting that you mentioned Free Comic Book Day, because there's a Free Comic Book Day comic that you put out, and it's a self-contained story. Just like it's like 9 pages long. Did this actually go to stores? Was this basically online? How did the Free Comic Book Day story go?
It was actually a 5-pager. The document might have been 9 pages with the cover and I have a pin up in the back and stuff. But how did it start about? I wanted to do something for Free Comic Book Day. And I'm kind of like, well, what should I do? And I'm like, I can't really put together a full issue. Well, I write an anthology, so obviously I can do a short. I asked James about it, Insane's publisher, and he said, sure, no problem. And obviously we couldn't do a print run. We decided just to make it digital because that's easy. No cost in printing there. And I found some people to work on it so that it could be a free book. And just put it out there. And so it's really the only Free Comic Book Day exclusive that Insane offers.
Very cool. Now, do you want to talk a little bit about the story from the thing it says it's called The Old Man and the Sea Serpent?
Yes. Yes. So basically, it's a very simple story about an old man telling his 2 grandchildren a time he was out fishing by himself. He's a commercial fisherman, so he's in a regular commercial trawler. And he's out in the middle of the ocean, and he's in the middle of a storm, and he encounters the grand old Leviathan. Mm-hmm.
And more than that, we can't say because that would spoil the ending.
He meets the Leviathan and he gives it a pet and then he goes on his way.
That's right. So it's a very good ending and a big surprise I really liked. And I talked a little bit about that before we started to record. But I always love a surprise, and that was a big surprise on there as well. And of course, the Leviathan shows up in the poster, or the pinup that you have after that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I did a pinup in the back of Volume 1, and there's going to be a pinup hopefully in every single one. So I thought, I want to add a little more punch, not just the story. So I asked a contributor to Insane, Steve Benton. He does American Bison. I asked him if he would be interested, anybody, if they would be interested in doing a pinup, and he said, sure, no problem. And I think he did a great one.
Oh.
I think it was awesome.
It's a wonderful pinup, of course. It's a guy standing, which I like. It's a guy standing, and there's a little sign that says, no fishing from pier. Of course, what's he doing? He's fishing. And of course, what has he caught? He's caught the Leviathan.
I love because the way he's standing there, I said it was very Norman Rockwell-esque.
Yes. Yes. Not only that, he's kind of shocked is what he's caught. This is very good. It's very well done. I really like the pinup real well. That's a great thing. I like that
a lot.
What
I wanted to do with the story, though, was similar to The Fallen Angel, when you have a guy in a bar, he's kind of telling all of his troubles to the bartender. I like these iconic, you could call them tropes or stereotypes of stories that you see all the time, and I like turning them on their head. So this is very similar. It's a grandfather kind of sits his 2 grandkids on his lap and wants to tell him a story about what it was like in the good old days.
Right,
and so
right.
I wanted to use that as a premise to build off of, and the story he happened to tell is the meeting of the Leviathan.
Well, what's interesting to me, too, as I look over your work, you tend to focus on drama rather than action, shall we say. You'll have action sequences occasionally in the story, but it's mostly there's something going on that we don't quite understand at the beginning, and it gets revealed, and of course, that's a great way to write. These could be very easily like Twilight Zone episodes or some kind of another anthology TV show.
Yeah.
Because you've got all kinds of drama involved with it and things that happen that make it real interesting to read. So all these things really just yell out to me as, like on Sci-Fi Channel, they make an anthology show and you could have your stuff in there. Mm. I'd really like to see that.
To me, storytelling-wise, the most important element of storytelling is theme. I feel like if you don't have a strong theme to your story, you're just making a popcorn blockbuster, you know, not something that has a backbone. So especially going into these Modern Testament shorts where the characters that are featured in them have such history to them and such meaning to them. I really wanted to drive that theme home in which each one has a particular purpose. So I wanted to bring that to the table and push that forward. And that's what the stories are built around. Not necessarily a plot, but what the essence of the character's theme is.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just funny, interesting to do that because not many people do drama very well. I think a lot, especially in comics, we expect it to be punching and kicking and, you know, those kinds of things. And to see somebody who can do drama really well, I think is real encouraging. So I think it's just great the way you do that.
Thank you.
Now, why don't we talk about Volume 2? Because you were kind enough to send me something, the volume that I could read. And, man, it's hard to believe as much as I like number one, I like number two even better.
Thank you. Thank you.
You've got some really intriguing stuff going on in there. And I don't want to spoil anything, but let me just say that of the stories that were in there, again, I was really sold by the third one.
The third one, okay. The third one is, again, I'm trying to keep the last story to focus on the horseman.
Right, right. And it's called What Is He Good For? And, of course, that gives something of a clue. And, of course, the subtitle says absolutely nothing, and some of us remember certain songs might remember what this is talking about. And we come in and we see a soldier who has been injured. And he's going along, but of course, because of his injury, he can't really go back and do the thing that he's good at, and that was fighting in combat. And somebody comes up and starts talking to him, and that's where things get really interesting. I was gripped. I just, you know, I don't want to spoil it, but let's just say that you've got to deal with certain things in your life. If you're good at something and it's not necessarily something that's good for people around you, you sometimes have to find other things, and what happens if you can't? You know, he's got a family and they're on a cruise, and it's just such a great little story. I don't want to spoil it, but things that happen on there, his solution, the soldier's solution is really terrific. I just loved it. The thing that he came up with to resolve the situation, I really loved. I thought, wow, that was pretty smart thinking on the fly there. So that was a story I loved the best. Do you have any background on that might have people look forward to it?
Well, background on that particular story or the volume in general?
Well, let's start with the volume in general, and we'll go to that story.
Well, yeah, so after I was done with Volume 1 does an angel and a demon, and then I picked a horseman. So if I'm going to stick with horsemen, I got to choose one, and that's done. And now I got to fill the other two slots. So I was like, this is going to be simple. There's a million biblical beings in the Bible, and I'm just going to choose two. And obviously, and when I went online and I started doing research, I was surprised. There was a very short list to choose from. So I ended up picking three characters, and I guess we could tell who they are because they're on the cover. So the first story is a golem, which is essentially is from Jewish mythology.
Right.
And then the second story is, in contrast to the Leviathan, is the behemoth. So Leviathan's the king of the sea, and behemoth is king of the land. And the last story, as we were describing, focuses on war, horseman of war. So again, I took each character and I try to root them down to their essence and try to build a story around that. And for war, I try to pit these, as I did with famine, when famine is angry and deals with somebody who's overweight. I try to pit each horseman with somebody who deals well with them or can contrast with them or has a good relationship with them. And with war, it was kind of easy. We're going to choose a veteran. And from there, it's just let's see what we can do and what kind of story we should build off of that relationship.
I love that one. I thought that was great. Because, again, the end surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
His solution, the soldier's solution to things, really got me. And I thought, oh, my gosh, that was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
That was a brilliant thing to do. And, you know, you're probably not going to follow up on it, but it would be really fascinating to know what happens after that. So
you're going to have to figure it out for yourself.
Okay, well, that's
That's was actually very different too in the original draft I wrote. It's a 10-page story, and the ending that you're talking about was in the last two pages. And the first draft I wrote was 8 pages. It had a very different ending.
Wow.
So I had a couple people read it, and they said the ending doesn't really jive with me. So I added 2 more pages, and I changed the ending. So it's funny how you say that you like the ending, because it went a completely 180 from what it was originally was.
Very cool. I really liked it because it just grabbed a hold of me. Now you've got 2 more stories in there. One's called Schoolyard Monster, and that's one with the golem. Mm-hmm. And then you got The Great Hunt. Schoolyard Monster I really liked because, again, it's kind of an everyday thing that goes on, but it takes a really interesting supernatural turn.
Yeah.
Which I like.
I like Schoolyard Monster, too. I believe that was my favorite. And, again, I try to choose artistic styles for each story that's going to compare well. They're going to be different from every story. So as far as the tone of the stories go, they're very different in that War is it's a dialogue-heavy story. It's very dense.
Right.
And Schoolyard Monster goes in the opposite direction. It's got very little dialogue in the middle, sometimes none at all. And it doesn't show a whole lot, but there's a lot there behind the scenes, per se. Mm-hmm. And then, there's violence in the story, but a lot of it's off-panel and you don't really see it. And then getting stuck in the middle between a very, very dialogue-dense story and a story that has violence that you don't really see is the story in the middle, which is The Great Hunt of the Behemoth. And for that one, I decided to go all out because you don't see a lot in The Schoolyard Monster, but you sure see a lot in The Great Hunt.
Yeah. Wow, it's interesting because you've got two people kind of looking for what they believe is a monster, and let's just say it's very likely they find that, and it doesn't end up the way that they kind of hoped it would. So, but I want to go back to the first story a minute because I thought again, you do creepy extremely well. The last panel in the Schoolyard Monster was really good, where you know the golem is around, and if you know anything about golems, they come about in certain ways. And let's just say that he starts to go away at that point. And the way he goes away leaves it open that there's probably going to be another appearance of the golem sometime in that universe.
Possibly.
That's the way it is. And it's so creepy. I'm not going to spoil it because the whole reason why it creeped me out because I didn't know what was going to happen, and I don't want to ruin it for anybody else. But again, I think that these three stories in this volume, which is coming up very soon, I think is a great follow-up to the first one. I think you might even have done better than the first book.
Thank you, and I hope as the stories go on, that the volumes go on, we'll continue to get better.
Now, of course, what we want to do is make sure people can get the books that you're making. If somebody wants to get Modern Testament, they go to the Insane Comics website.
The best place to get it is on insanecomics.com. James put up a great website with a store, and you can find Modern Testament, and they're available in both digital and print, except the free comic book day short. That's only available digitally.
Mm-hmm. Because it's great. It's very different. I love variety, as I say, and I enjoyed reading stories that had me fooled or had me guessing until the very last panel, which I always like. There's nothing better than a good story, and these are really great stories, very well told. So something different, a great concept, which leads me to ask, of course, you're working on Modern Testament. And you said you've got 4 volumes, 2 more in the works. Have you got other projects in the works that we should know about?
As far as comics go, I got a ton of prose stuff coming out. I update my Facebook page regularly. With that, I could kind of give a link out to that later. But as far as comics go, I got a couple projects I'm working on with artists. Nothing that's immediate, but I'm developing some. I'm trying to touch in different genres. I'm working on a pirate story, a detective story. And my goal is kind of be like, one of my favorite directors is Danny Boyle. Did 28 Days Later, and he's done Sunshine and Slumdog Millionaire. And I heard in an interview once that he doesn't want to try to do the same movie twice. He wants to jump into a completely different genre, completely different type of story, and that's kind of my take on it. If I write a werewolf story, I don't want to write another werewolf story. I want to do something completely different. And so I try to mix it up, and it really challenges me as a writer to do that.
Are these likely to come out from Insane Comics, or are you going to self-publish some of these?
Possibly. I know self-publishing is definitely difficult, and I have 2 little ones. My time is very short. I'm working with a lot of artists on these as partners, and if I self-publish, I don't think I can give it the time it deserves. But it all depends on where we want to go with it. Some of them we have plans for what we want to do. Others we don't, but I'm not ruling anything out. And perhaps there's future titles in my relationship with Insane Comics, certainly. Because James does a wonderful job, and I'd love to continue with him.
Okay. Well, that's a good thing. We'll keep our ears to the ground on this good stuff. And I want to, when this comes out, I want to be able to write a review of it, of the second volume, because I really like it. You're bucking trends, you know, with the anthology and doing shorter stories. But I think you do it very successfully, and I think it's a great thing to do. Mm-hmm. So if people want to follow up with you on Facebook, how do they do it?
Yes, I have an author page, facebook.com/FrankMartinWriter. And I update everything that I'm working on with comics, concept art, and potential storylines. And also I got a whole bunch of prose stuff that I'm working on if you like reading traditional stories, part of a whole bunch of anthologies and novels. So I try to touch on a whole bunch of different stuff. And I'm also on Twitter if you want to follow me on Twitter, @FrankTheWriter. So that's kind of simple.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Because sometimes with your name is like my name. Once you look me up, try to find Wayne Hall in there, there are probably like 1,000 Wayne Halls out there.
There's a Frank Martin colorist, too. He's on a bunch of different titles. So every time I see one of his books coming out, either for Image or Marvel or something, I kind of see Frank Martin there. I imagine my name. Of course, I hope it doesn't say colorist next to it, but he definitely does a great job.
I'm always interested to find some comic creator's name is Wayne Hall like mine. So we'd have Wayne Hall interviewing Wayne Hall, and that would be kind of crazy stuff to see. But you're doing great stuff, Frank. I really love it. I hope you continue to do that. I can't wait to see all four volumes of this because it's great, great material. And if anybody is interested in something a little different and something that will give you a little shorter reading experiences, great. Because like I said, X-Men books have gone on for decades, and I don't know where to drop in the middle of it and have any idea what's going on. But with the Europe stories, we have a pretty fair idea what's happening pretty quickly. And we get a nice conclusion, or like I say, often the last panel just grabs you. So that's great storytelling in my opinion.
Thank you.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
I want to welcome back to the podcast Roland Mann, creator of such good things as Kray and Demon's Tales. And he's got with him Deonna Harold, a creator of a brand new book that we'll be working on together called Tiny. And there's a Kickstarter going on. How do you guys know each other, by the way?
Oh, that's a really cool story, and it's best told, I think. It starts with Deonna. She has to start the story.
Okay.
Okay. I'll do my best. So I love to act, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do like with my life. That sounds silly, but I was always drawing. But I loved just acting. So I went to go audition for Disney because they do like a character performer stuff. And I was like, oh, that sounds cool. And so that's when I met this girl there, and I ended up exchanging names with her so I could contact her on Facebook, see if she made the audition. Well, neither of us made the audition, but it turns out she was Roland Mann's daughter, and we became friends. And I found out she lived like really close to me, like not like really close, but, like 15 minutes away. And that's actually rare to meet someone who's so close to you in vicinity, because I met people from Ireland at these auditions. I met people from Texas, you name it, anywhere and everywhere. And so we became good friends. And one day, I guess she was showing her dad, Roland Mann, some of my artwork, and that's kind of how it started. That is our origin story.
Wow. Sounds like a comic right there.
Yeah, I know.
I
so it was actually pretty cool because from my end, Brittany would go to these things and would come back. And I hear, oh, you know, I met this artist. Oh, that sounds cool. And, I, you know, it's actually she said, I met this girl who does art. She didn't say this artist. And she showed me something. I'm like, oh, that's nice, right? And then she started showing me, oh, look, Dad, she's got more stuff here. And I'm like, wow, this is really good. And so I started asking my daughter questions. See if she does this. See if she does this. See if she can see any of this. So it's funny because my daughter and Deanna were having this conversation, but I was asking, you know, I don't know, about half of the questions. Anyways, see if she does any comic book work. So it was kind of funny kind of the way that all came together.
Well, that's cool because you never know when you're going to make contact.
Well, that's exactly it.
When it comes to this. So it's really cool stuff. So now you guys have been working on a book called Tiny, and I got to get a copy of it at the recent MegaCon here in Orlando, Florida, and I really liked it. I think it's such a great book. I think the story is fun, and I think your art, Deanna, is really great, very fanciful, very engaging, too, visually. The use of color is something that really got me as well. So how did this get started? How did you guys start to work on this project? Roland, you're the one to ask about
that?
Sure,
yeah. Well, once Brittany sort of said, yeah, Dad, she's interested in comics and she has an interest in comics, I said, well, look, why don't we just get together and chat? And so we just met at a local Chick-fil-A here and sat down, and she brought a sketchbook, and I looked at her sketchbook, and, you know, I just sort of said, you know, what kind of things do you like to do? Are you interested in comics? What do you like to draw? And her response was, I like fairy tales a lot. I'm like, okay, well, so let me do this, and let me go back and do some research on some fairy tales, and I'll put together a couple of pitches for you. And so I did. I did some research on fairy tales and that kind of thing. Sent her the top three that were attractive to me. I'm like, oh, these three are the ones that I would like to do an adaptation of. And I sent those to her, and she read through them, and she said, I like this one. I said, okay, well, let's do that one then. And so I expanded the pitch just a little bit. She did character sketches for all the characters that were going to appear in the story. And while she was doing that, I got to work on a plot. For those of your listeners who know, we're working Marvel style, which is plot first. So I basically described to her, here's what happens on this page or on these two pages, something like that. And then I just let her be the director. So she fully takes everything in there and just directs it. And then after the art's done, then I'll come back and add the script.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is your first comic, right, Deanna?
Yeah, first one.
So what was it like? Had you read comics before? How much have you been involved in the comics medium? Do you buy them on a regular basis? What was your exposure to this, and how did this hit you?
Well, it's funny you should say that because comics, it wasn't really much involved in the comics world. Like, Marvel's coming out with the movies, which is always really cool. But I always thought it was kind of like, not impossible, but there's so many comic books that I was like, I don't think it's just too late to catch up. There's like, I don't know, like 100 of something. But I was always very interested in the Eastern comics, which is also known as manga or manga. So that was kind of like what I followed, just because that's all I'd known from like middle school. I was introduced to it in middle school. I'm sure if I had been introduced to comics, I'd probably be a big comic fan too, but I'd discover them much later in life, like this year. not that I didn't know they existed. I just was like, I thought they're exclusively for superheroes, so it was interesting to learn more about it.
Well, it's interesting because you say that, and yet when you two talked about it, you guys were doing a fairy tale. Were you surprised by that comics could go that route? Deanna?
Actually, yeah, I was. Well, we did talk about possible graphic novel at first, but we wanted to split it up because I was in school, and it was hard to double a lot of the workload, so we split it up to comics. But it was interesting because I didn't think comics could do that exactly, so I knew graphic novels could, but not comic books.
The industry is dominated by what we'd like to call Long John's characters.
Yeah.
People wear costumes and stuff like that. So, but yet there's a lot of, and I'm sure you've probably by now come across some of these other books, there's a lot of other storytelling going on that has a lot of different kinds of things happening in it. So it's great that you've gotten into this. And honestly, your artwork is really, it's so great. It just fits the fairy tale genre so well. I love the colors and stuff. Now, did you do the colors as well as the drawing?
Oh, yeah, everything. The sketching, the inking, colors, all me.
Wow. Because I like when there's danger, it's like a bluish green. When there's other things going on, there's kind of a yellowish tone to that. And various character stuff. How long did it take you to get your mind wrapped around all these good things? Because doing the first comic has got to be something of a little daunting process.
Oh, yeah.
Did it take a while to get the character? You did, according to Roland, you did character sketches. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got all different kinds of characters, including human-like and other kinds, including insects and other kinds of people. Did it take you a while to get into that? How did the process go for you?
It was actually pretty good because I love character design. Whether I'm good at it or not is a whole other issue, but A Tiny, for example, the first sketch I actually made of her was actually what she looks like now. So that was a blessing in and of itself. So she came out really easily. But like the trolls, for example, I had about like 13 different sketches of what they could look like until I finally settled on what you see in the book right now. So some took longer and some didn't.
Did your manga background help you with some of that?
I actually kind of did, funny enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
that's good.
So what you don't get to see, unfortunately, what almost no one will get to see, at least listening to us or until she publishes it, is her sketchbook. And her sketchbook is just full. You know, I didn't even know half the characters in there because there were a lot of manga in there. And, you know, I'm flipping through this and you can see that she does love to draw a lot of different kinds of characters and different poses and that kind of stuff. And so, unfortunately, you don't get to see that. But it was one of those things when we first met, I was just sitting there going, wow, there's just a lot of sketches in here, a lot of characters, a lot of studies, that kind of thing. Very cool to see.
Mm-hmm, very neat. Well, we'll have to see that sometime. That would be fun. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the first of two issues, as I understand it. Now, I did want to mention one thing, that the fairy tale you guys settled on was Thumbelina.
Right.
Was the thing that you mentioned, especially it's mentioned on the inner cover of the book.
Right.
And, Roland, what was it about Thumbelina that drew you to the story?
You know, I've got you're talking about Long John characters, and I've always had a fascination for the Ant-Mans and for the Atoms and for the characters like that. There's just something that draws me to them, being the little guy, right? They can do all these things. Of course, you know, these guys have superpowers, but they can do these things that present a unique set of challenges. Of course, one of the early scenes in Tiny is just to see where she lives, where she sleeps. And it's like getting to and from places, you know, we walk out the door, but just think if you were the size of Tiny, well, mm-hmm. you couldn't even sit in this chair because it would be like a major cliff to you. You would have to figure out how to rock climb essentially up the chair.
Mm-hmm.
And rappel down if you wanted to get off. So to me, I'm incredibly fascinated about that kind of thing. And of course, there's the deeper layers of, well, how does someone like that fit into the world? As people, we always have the questions like, well, where's my place? Where do I belong? Why am I different? That kind of thing. And so I feel drawn to that kind of character.
Did you feel that same way, Deanna?
I've just always loved the story of Thumbelina. If you ever read the original fairy tale, most infuriating thing because thing after thing happens. So I actually enjoy that. You feel an emotion and I love that, how it makes me feel, like how it just brings out so much, like what's going to happen at the end? Oh my gosh, I have to know. So I love the intrigue of it. So that's what I love about Thumbelina, or the story originally.
Now, you guys have one benefit that many other creators don't have, is that you live near each other.
Right.
So you guys could get together and talk about stuff. Did you do more of that, or did you guys actually do like everybody else does and go over the internet and interact and send each other samples and stuff like that, or what you were talking about? Deanna, did you prefer to meet in person, or did you want like to go over the web?
Well, I kind of like both. We started out originally, like initially, mainly when we had nothing done in the beginning, like no pages finished at all. When Mr. Man was coming up with the plots and such, we would meet in person so he could discuss stuff, or if I was really confused about something, we would meet in person. But most of it regarding me giving him pages or me giving him drafts to look at was over email, maybe Dropbox, stuff of that sort. And I don't know if I have a preference. It's good either way because I get good feedback. Roland Man's actually really good at being descriptive, so it's it's helpful either way.
Do you have a preference, Roland?
I guess I'm old school enough that I like to be able to have that face-to-face interaction. As she said, we do so much of it. See, I think everything, with the exception of some early pencil work on the Bristol board, which she decided was not for her, I think everything was done via email, that kind of electronically. So everything is digital. Like she said, early on we met and we talked a lot and talked about the characters and this kind of thing. But once we got rolling, I still see her, but, well, we do most of our stuff over the interwebs now.
Well, see, it's so convenient. You can do it whenever it's better for you, and then the other person can pick it up when it's convenient for them.
That's right.
So that's a great thing about it. Now, I got to ask Deanna, did you have any people in mind when you designed the characters? Because Tiny actually has a strong resemblance to what I would consider a Disney princess. Is that the Did that influence your pick of what she would look like?
It's funny you say that because a lot of people say my style looks a lot like Disney. And I guess, I mean, it's hard to judge your own style, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But I remember back in high school, I wanted to be a Disney hand-drawn animator. So I tried really hard for a while to have my style look like Disney's. But Glenn Keane, more specifically, I adored his work. He influenced me a lot, but then I tried to like step away from it, but I don't really think it's quite left. So as for influence, it's a good question. I'm guessing Disney did in some crazy ethereal way influence me, but it's funny you mentioned that.
Okay. Well, now, Roland, this is set up in a different way. It's two issues. And most comics do things, especially with today with trade paperbacks. Everybody wants to do a 5 or 6 issue thing.
Yeah.
Collected into a trade. Why two issues?
Well, I think Dion touched on it earlier. We initially talked about a graphic novel, and we set about to do that. When we first started work on Tiny, we intended for it to be a graphic novel. But she mentioned school. She is still a student. And so there's a couple of things kind of came into play. And, you know, for me, I got to looking at it and going, wow, this stuff looks really good. People need to see Deanna's work. And so I knew MegaCon was coming up, and I knew it was, you know, MegaCon in Orlando here. And so I was like, there's no way. I knew there was no way. And there's no way she could finish the entire thing by MegaCon. So I was like, okay, so here's what we can do. It's like we can split it in half, because we already had about half of it, close to half of it done when we got this idea. It's like, okay, look, if we can just finish the next couple of pages, there's a natural break at the halfway point in the story here. I manipulated a little bit to make it work, but it was a natural thing. And so it's like, we'll just end it here, and this will be the first issue, and then we can just break it into two. We can do the first issue, have it available at MegaCon, and then that's when we decided, well, look, we can run a Kickstarter to help us raise money to actually print the second issue, because we went ahead and printed up the first one to take it to MegaCon. So that's kind of how that came about. I mean, I'll be honest with you, when it's all said and done, and probably not immediately, obviously we want to push the Kickstarter, push the fact that we've got the two separate issues, but 6 months, 8 months, 10 months down the road, I can very easily see it becoming a trade or a graphic novel.
Okay, very good. Now, you brought up the Kickstarter, which is an important thing. When does the Kickstarter come to an end?
That's going to end on Saturday, June the 25th.
So not far from now. So what we need to do is get out and support. But, you know, the good news is, haven't you already reached your goal?
We have. Yes, we've reached
our goal. That was fast.
It was. I got to tell you, we were incredibly excited by this. You know, MegaCon this year was 4 days. And we made our goal in about 3.5 days.
Wow.
Yeah, we're very excited about that. Very flattered that so many people would support us so quickly and help us to reach that goal, but it was very exciting, yeah.
So let's figure out here. Once you reach your goal, of course, then they have all these wonderful things where you get to put out like bonus items that you can get, people will get as a result. Did you have any ideas, Tiana, as what you wanted to do for what other things you could offer people who had supported the project?
We're thinking sweet little like merchandise thing. Roland, do you want to talk a little more about that?
Yeah, I'll tell you, we kicked that around a lot. And in fact, once we reached the goal, and after a day or two after I had recovered from MegaCon, I actually sent a message out to all the backers and said, okay, all right, look, you guys got us to the goal. What do you want to see? What kind of stretch goals do you want us to put in? And you know, we didn't get a lot of responses, but the couple of responses that we got, they're like, you know what? We're here to support the book. We want to see you get the book done. We're not too concerned about bookmarks or trading cards or anything like that. So we haven't done anything. We're still kicking it around. It's not like that we have decided not to do anything, but we don't want to just add, here's a sticker because here's a sticker. I'm not opposed to stickers, but if nobody really wants one, why should we add that in when the idea here is for the comic? So, yeah, I do realize that if we're going to do anything, that we need to do it pretty quickly. But
that'd be good.
But you know, I will say this: the exciting thing for me is that everybody seems to be saying we're interested in supporting the book. We're not worried about all the little swag that goes with it.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, that's a good thing.
It is,
you know, because honestly, you know, a lot of times I see comics people and they've got little extra things tied on to try to get you interested in the comic. But sometimes you're more interested in the tie on than you are the
right
comic. And so to me, to hear that the people love the comic so much that they don't really worry about the additional things is a great thing. It says you guys are doing something right, it seems to me.
Well, I hope so.
So right now where we're at, when we're recording, you're almost reaching twice your goal.
Really close, and yeah.
That'd be nice at the end. Now, of course, when this comes out, I mean, the numbers will probably change, so I don't really want to mention numbers.
Right.
But you don't have long to go, and so it's always great to jump on something successful. You know, success breeds more success. So if you want to see more of this kind of thing, I would say get out to Kickstarter.com and look for Tiny, a comic adaptation of Thumbelina, as it's called.
And the cool thing is, really, at this point, because the Kickstarter's made, really it's just a decision of saying, do I want this or do I not want it? Because it's not, well, I'll pledge and this may or may not make. Well, no, it's already made, so it's just you deciding, yes, here's what I want. I want copies 1 and 2, or I only want the first issue, or I only want number 2, or whatever. It's just making up your mind if you want the book.
Mm-hmm. What about stores? Are you going to put it out in stores?
Probably. We talked a little bit about that, and you're talking about going through the traditional catalog and everything.
Right.
That's a much more difficult process than it was 10 years ago. We've gotten some support from the local stores. A couple of them have already said, yes, we'd love to have you in when the book is out. Come and sit here and sign some copies for the clientele, that kind of thing. As for getting it into Diamond, getting it distributed nationwide, that's something we'll certainly look at. It's something Deanna and I will have to talk about. It may be a decision that we say, well, look, let's just wait until both books are complete. We can solicit them that way, or we might even just solicit them as a one-shot, as a graphic novel then. So it's something that we're going to look at, yes.
Now, Deanna, I got to ask you, there's amongst the goals and stuff, there's drawings of people are making based on your art.
Yeah.
What's that like? As you know, because you're used to doing your own stuff, and so all of a sudden people are making designs based on what you've come up with. You know, as an artist, that's quite a compliment, isn't
it?
Oh,
yeah. No, it is. I saw some of them, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, they're so wonderful. Like, they're just really – they're lovely to see. And it's just funny thinking, like, oh, my gosh, that's my character, and they have drawn it. That's so cool. So, yeah.
So are you going to get originals of those and kind of keep them for when you go around and looking for other jobs to do and maybe be able to show people, look, these people did artwork based on my stuff?
I might steal them.
Very good, because it's a great thing, and you guys have done a great job. You said you had other possibilities for fairy tales.
Yeah.
Might you actually go back to that well and come up with another fairy tale that you can do? And maybe, you know, we talked about a graphic novel. Yeah. You could do a whole thing of fairy tales on that. Would you guys be interested in doing something like that? What about you, Roland?
Certainly. I mean, it wouldn't be something that I would write off, because as you can see with Deanna's work, she's a lot of fun to work with. She's got a great attitude. Her art's fantastic, and she's just fun to work with. I will tell you this, though. I feel about 99.9% certain that we've got another project to follow this one.
Cool.
After I saw the first, I don't know, dozen pages or so, I was like, my goodness gracious, this girl's got the chops and everything. So I started thinking about, okay, if she enjoys this, if she likes the experience, if she likes doing the comics, what can we do next? And so I started pitching a little something at her back before the first issue was done. I'm not going to talk about it a lot because we want to get through Tiny first. Right? And then once we get through Tiny, then I'll hit her even harder with this. I say, okay, what do we think? Let's go now. Let's do this.
Okay, now, so where are you with issue 2 then, Deanna, as far as, because obviously you have to have the script in order to come up with the issue. How far along are you? How long before issue number 2 will be ready to go to the press?
Well, I think our goal for number 2 is to be, I think, completely, and correct me if I'm wrong, Roland, by August, sometime in August, to be done with it completely, like illustration-wise.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right, because it says on Kickstarter, September is when a lot of these things will actually go out and
hit.
So, which is a good thing. You've got to have it done in order to go to the press and things like that, which is so good about that. So I've got to ask you, Deanna, though, what was it like to be at a convention and be behind the table?
Well,
in some ways, it must be kind of daunting. You know, on the other way, you know, you've got these people that come up and say how great all your stuff is. What was that like for you? Because you're kind of early in your process. Roland's been to many of these. He knows how all these things go. But for you, as a kind of a newbie for this, what was your experience like at MegaCon?
Oh, it was fantastic. Because I've only been to MegaCon, I think, once before, maybe two times before, and they were back in high school. So, and I'm almost in college, so that's like, what, 4 or 5 years about? So it's been a while, but it was really surreal being behind the table. I mean, really cool, though, because I had people who knew what they were doing. Roland knew what he was doing, which is great for me. And it's cool because I got to meet, like, since I'm on the internet interacting with people who like my art or other artists like me, it's cool because some of them stopped by the table and I was like, I know you from Tumblr. And so that was really great. Just getting to know people and meeting them. I like meeting people.
That's, It's fun to put faces with the thing, because so many of our closest friends now are on the internet,
yeah.
You know, and we don't actually see face-to-face people very mm-hmm. often. So it's really nice to be able to do that kind of stuff. So more conventions for you and the guys in the future? Are you guys going to do some more of these?
Yeah, rolling? Absolutely, yeah. Now, one of the things, of course, we have to keep in mind is Deanna is a student. So
right.
Her parents would kill me if I said anything that came before that. I do think, though, it was an enjoyable experience. So probably mostly what you'll see is us doing the local stuff around here, this stuff that's kind of easy to get to in a drive. Certainly, once the Kickstarter's done, of course, you know how those things can go. They can take up a lot of your time. Once the Kickstarter's mm-hmm. done, I'm going to start reaching out to stores locally and say, okay, you know, look, let's talk. And now that we're done, you said you were interested in this, so let's get us on the schedule. We'll come to your store and we'll sign some books for the customers there.
Very cool. Very cool. I'm so glad you guys are having a lot of success with this. And I'm going to really be happy when the time comes and the money gets to go into you guys, so that you can continue to move forward with this great project, because it's a lot of fun. It's very fanciful. It's very entertaining. It's just a beautiful thing all the way around, both on the writing and on the art side. So
thank you so much.
I just hope Tiny continues to fly, you know, and you guys continue to do things. I could see this being an animated thing.
That'd be cool.
Yep.
I don't want to put a bug in anybody's ear, but man, how great this would be as an animated short or something.
And the cool thing is, that's part of what Deanna is studying, you know, so you just never know.
Well, Deanna made one of your projects.
Who knows?
Okay. Well, it's great success. Again, I recommend Tiny. It's a comic adaptation of Thumbelina. Go to Kickstarter. That's where you can order the books and stuff. And you keep up with Roland and things like that as far as how we can get it in the future.
Absolutely, yeah. I'll be talking about it all over my Facebook page, Roland Mann Author. And, of course, I'll blog about it some. You can find me at rolandmann.me, M-E.
Okay. Now, Deanna, this is obviously keeping you busy. So school is what's keeping you busy most of the time?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Okay. Yeah, we need not say more about that, because most of us have been through school. How about you, Roland? Are there other projects that you're working on, too, that we should be aware of?
There are, actually. I've got a couple of things. Hopefully, your listeners will be familiar with an artist by the name of Dean Zachary. Mm-hmm. I worked with Dean a long time ago when I was an editor. Dean, he did a ferret for me when I was the editor of The Protectors. He did the ferret series. And then when I moved over to the Ultraverse, Dean came over and did some Nightman for me as one of the Ultraverse titles. So Dean and I started talking, I don't know, several months ago, and he has a particular fascination for one of the, I won't mention the character, but one of the corporate comics' big-name characters, and I kept saying, dude, I keep seeing you posting all these pages. You know, you can't do anything with those, because he kept doing, like, these sample pages. I'm like, you know, you're a 25-year veteran. You don't need to be posting sample pages. I said, why don't you get out and do your own project? I said, do a creator-owned thing where you can own it and get it published. I said, all these pages that you've done so much, you could have had a book out by now. I said, you're drawing anyway, so why don't you do it? I thought I'd made him mad at first, because I didn't hear back from him for a while. Finally, he dropped me a line and said, you know, I've been thinking about what you said. He goes, I think I'd like to do a project. He said, you want to work on something with me? And I was like, yeah. So so he and I have got – I can't talk about it just yet, but you'll be one of the first to know once I can talk about it. I'm pretty excited about it, because some of the early stuff that I've seen from him turning in is just, oh, my goodness. You can tell he's having a blast with it, too. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, you can tell when somebody really loves a project.
You can. And really to me, that's what it ought to be about. It ought to be about, we're doing something that we like, we're doing something we have fun with, and it's going to show, so that when the readers see it, they're going to say, you know, this looks like they were having fun.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, and Tiny certainly reflects that. So you guys keep up the great work. I can't wait to see issue number 2. I'm so glad I got issue number 1. I'm really happy about that. And we will see when issue 2 comes out. Maybe I'll write a review, and we'll get this stuff out into the internet and see if we can't get more people buying this thing, because it really needs a lot of attention and I think a lot of support, because it's great
stuff. Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, we would absolutely love and appreciate that.
And Deanna, much success in school. Keep it up, because you know, obviously your studies are helping out in your artwork. So, boy, keep that stuff up,
too.
Thanks,
I will.
And that's a wrap for this episode. Until next time, keep reading your comics.